it's the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY.
You're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., I'm joined by my co-host, Greg Rinky, to give you our insight on the legal and political issues happening locally and across the country that affect you. In addition to listening on your radio, we're broadcasting around the world on www.wgy.com. Visit our show's website at www.tullyrinkyshow.com for podcasts and previous shows and a comment on our blog. It's been a big week for law. The U.S. Supreme Court wrapped up its 2007/2008 term by handing down several major decisions. Tonight, we're going to take a look at some of those decisions and give you a place to voice your opinion on them. We'll start off with arguably the biggest decision of the term, the lifting of the D.C. gun ban. How will this decision affect New York? We're going to have criminal defense attorney Thomas Carr joining us a little later to discuss the ruling. Two other rulings that are in the spotlight this week include the controversial decision to eliminate capital punishment for child rapists, and second, the decision to slash the punitive damage awards in the 1989 Exxon Valdez disaster. Joining us each week are Valerie and Chris, our on-air correspondents. In the producer's booth is Caitlin and our favorite intern, Taylor. If you want to join us in any of the discussions, don't hesitate to give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phones. All this information can be found on our website at TullyRinkyShow.com. To begin, let's get a rundown on what's happening with the gun ruling, Chris.
Thanks, Matt. In a landmark decision from a Supreme Court came on Thursday, it struck down a 37-year-old D.C. law which barred residents from owning handguns. This case was started when Dick Heller, an armed security guard, brought a lawsuit against the District of Columbia after they rejected his application to keep handguns in his home. This 5-4 ruling was the first time that the court had interpreted the Second Amendment rights since its ratification in 1791. The amendments read, "A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed." This decision is sure to impact the gun laws throughout this country. While the decision provides a resolution for the ongoing dispute over gun rights, it will also raise more questions in the long run. Greg, how do you think this ruling will impact the gun owners in the U.S.?
Well, first off, I want to say that this is a huge decision. This is a decision that has been closely watched and closely followed by both the NRA and both by the anti-gun movement. This decision is the first time that the Supreme Court has since 1939 interpreted the Second Amendment. And it was a decision that was being closely followed by many gun enthusiasts and anti-gun movement.
What do you mean by anti-gun movement?
Well, there's people out there that believe that there is not a right to bear arms.
And obviously they've been proven wrong.
Well, yes, by this very closely watched decision, and 5-4 decision, a very close decision.
But it doesn't matter if it's close. If it's 5-4, they won.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a huge victory for
Why are you using adjectives?
Absolutely. It is. It's a 5-4 decision, a close decision.
It's not close. They won. It's as simple as that. So the people that want to have weapons in their homes won. You're using a lot of adjectives, and I don't understand.
Well,
it's a 5-4 decision, Matt. There are four other people felt that way.
Well, you know, as the only lifetime member of the NRA in this room right now, I don't understand why there's adjectives being used. It's a win. There's no closely, you know, won. There's nothing like that. It's a win. People have a right in their homes to have weapons.
There must have been a reason why they made this law.
It's an amendment to the Bill of, or to the U.S. Constitution. It's part of the Bill of Rights.
I'm saying
it's not a law.
The ban. There had to have been a reason why they made the ban.
Absolutely. People that were misinformed about gun rights passed this law back in the late 1970s. It's one of the most restrictive, if not the most restrictive, law on the possession of weapons in your home in the country.
Do you think that legalizing this can actually lessen the desire of having guns?
Why would you want to lessen the desire of having guns?
Illegal guns, I mean. I mean, it's human nature to want what you can't have. So if there was a ban and now it's lifted, they're saying that violence is going to increase. I actually think it could possibly decrease.
It will decrease. That studies have shown repeatedly that people that are well protected in their homes are less likely to be victimized. Because when you get a gun, people in the neighborhood are going to know that not to mess with your house. They're going to mess with people that don't have weapons.
Yeah, but isn't there another side to the story that, you know, the other side to this argument is that there's going to be more guns available. More guns could be potentially on the street. More guns are going to be in the hands of people that potentially should not have guns.
There's going to be restrictions still, though.
Absolutely, there's going to be restrictions, but when you put guns into people's hands, those guns potentially could fall into people who should not have guns.
But study after study has shown that if you put guns into people's hands, they will more likely defend themselves than have that gun be used against them.
Absolutely, but there still needs to be restrictions. And I think that's important for everyone to understand is that this landmark decision does not say that there can be no restrictions. To the licensing of firearms. For instance, New York has some pretty strict licensing. And actually, Matt, you're more familiar with it since you actually lived in New York City. But New York City has some of the most strict handgun licensing rules. How does this decision impact New York City?
I don't think this decision has a great impact in New York. And as far as me carrying a gun in New York City, I was a federal law enforcement officer when I lived in Brooklyn. So I was able to carry a firearm because of my position. I was exempt from the licensing rules. And I'll tell you this, after 9/11, my wife, I had to go, after she was involved in 9/11, I took her to the hospital after we were done with that. I had to go out with my National Guard unit the evening of September 11th. She had to stay home, and she felt comfortable because I had firearms in my apartment.
But the firearms you had in your apartment, were they personal firearms or were they your military-issued weapons?
They were personal firearms. And I'm exempt because of my status at the time as a federal law enforcement officer. I was exempt from the New York State licensing rules.
Does that transfer over to her if she were to use them in that home? Would that be legal?
Probably not. But the fact that there was a firearm in the house, if she had to use it, what's that old saying? I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6.
Yep.
So she believes firmly in that, and she ultimately got a pistol license when we moved up to the Capital District. She got a pistol license. I retired from federal law enforcement, and I got a pistol license as well.
Well, look at Bernard Goetz, perfect example of someone who carried a firearm, wasn't licensed in New York City, was robbed at, I don't know if it was knife point or by screwdriver knife point, but ended up shooting his assailants on the subway. Criminally, he was acquitted, but he was held responsible.
You don't want to go down the Bernie Goetz road with me, Greg. You don't want to do that.
But he was not held criminally liable. He was held civilly liable, and last I had heard, he had taken some menial job, actually, so that he didn't have to pay the award.
But here in New York, the licensing laws are pretty easy to get for your home. Versus D.C., there, I guess you can kind of look at it as there's two types of licenses, one for your house and one if you want to carry around on the street. And in New York, it's relatively easy to get one for your house, as long as you're not a convicted felon, as long as you're not ever been in a mental hospital. And there's a couple other minor rules. But getting it in your house is relatively easy.
But what is this decision going to do, Matt, in D.C.? Basically, D.C. can no longer have a ban on owning firearms in the house. That's crystal clear. But can they now restrict and say no one can carry a firearm?
Well, this is only the first case. This is the first one to go up, and it was clearly decided by the Supreme Court that people have a right to carry their firearms. People have misinterpreted what a militia means, and that's exactly what the Second Amendment talks about is a militia. And there was argument as to whether or not militia is everybody over the age of 18 or is a militia the National Guard. And I think what the Supreme Court held is that a militia is basically an individual right. Back in the 1700s when the Bill of Rights was passed, it pertained to members of the militia who were basically every male over the age of 18. So the Supreme Court, while it narrowly struck down or while it struck down the D.C. rule, it was very narrow. Now what's going to happen is we're going to have people pushing the limits of the law to see where is the line. And I think here in New York, the line's pretty clear. You can get a permit for your residence. You can get also a permit to carry concealed. But in other states, it's not that clear. And people are going to be involved in litigation on this. But
I think the most important thing that this decision held was it interpreted the Second Amendment. And I think it's important to read once again those words. And This is where a lot of the confusion stemmed. And the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution reads, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, and this is where the problem comes in. The right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed.
Listen, Greg, you could take all your commas, and I'll tell you where to go with them when we come back from this break. But when we come back, we're also going to have criminal defense attorney Tom Carr with us to go over how this decision will affect New York, and he'll either confirm or deny that I think it has little impact on New York. This is a very hot-button issue. If you want to give us a call us at 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your cell phone, so you can send us an email at info@TullyRinkyShow.com.
You know this isn't the right job for you, but the problem is you don't know what the right job is. If you're looking for career advice, Careers in Transition LLC can help. Careers in Transition LLC is a career counseling firm that helps you figure out the right job for you. They're not an employment agency, and Dr. Tom Denham is not a headhunter, but they can help you write a better resume, prep for a job interview, and a lot more. Careers in Transition LLC, 11 Computer Drive West in Albany, 366-8451, and online, careersintransitionllc.com.
If a commercial lease is in your future, listen closely. Conley Associates will provide you with an honest, unbiased comparison of available office space. Unlike the competition, Conley Associates works directly with you, the tenant, finding your business the ideal location at the best terms. Best of all, leave the landlords to us, because we represent tenants only. Secure your new office space with a tenants-only approach from Conley Associates. Landlords need not apply. Conley Associates, 463-5500.
As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
She's not a girl.
You're tuned into the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY. Call 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your AT&T or Verizon cell phone. Join attorneys Matthew Tully and Greg Rinke as they discuss legal and political topics affecting you from the Capital Region and beyond. That's 1-800-TALK-WGY.
Welcome back to the Tully Rinke Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and with me is my co-host Greg Rinke. Tonight, we're looking at the Supreme Court rulings announced earlier this week. If you hear something you want to give your opinion on, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY, *WGY on your cell phone. We're back with criminal defense attorney Tom Carr, who is coming on to us via the telephone. Tom, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Matt. How are you?
Good. Hey, Tom, you're from Ireland. What are the Irish gun control laws, just as for informational purposes?
Well, the Irish gun control laws are very, very restrictive. Handguns, for instance, have been illegal, banned outright since 1969. The only long guns one can possess is one can have one rifle and two shotguns, and the rifle can't be of a caliber larger than 22.
Why do they ban handguns in Ireland?
Well, Ireland had a very troubled past. It's kind of ironic that one of the things that was a struggle in Ireland was getting arms to fight the British when they were under British rule. And yet, once they finally gained independence, one of the first things that the government did was to turn around and ban most firearms. Now, Ireland had gone through a civil war of its own. So it seems like the government really at that time wants to make sure that no one would try to overthrow the new democratically elected government. So they just banned firearms, basically.
Tom, the reason why I called you is you're also an NRA life member, right?
Yes.
Good. Tell us about your experiences. You used to work for the New York State Assembly?
Yes, I did.
And you were the minority's general counsel?
Yes, I was counsel to the minority there, yes.
You're pretty familiar with New York state laws. Tell me how, if any way, the Supreme Court case will affect New York law.
Well, overall, it won't have too much of an effect, but in New York state, there are some strange little discrepancies. For instance, if you live in New York City and you get a license to carry a handgun, that license is good throughout the entire state of New York. However, if you live in any county outside of New York City, any handgun license you get to carry is not valid within the city of New York itself.
Why is that, Tom? That doesn't sound fair.
Well, it doesn't just apply to fairness between New York City and upstate. Even within counties upstate, usually the pistol licensing officer is a county court judge. And the county court judge has vast amounts of discretion as to whether or not to grant a license to carry a handgun to somebody or not.
Tom, tell us about the New York State Assembly and the gun lobby. Is there a strong gun lobby in New York, or has the NRA and the various other entities given up on New York?
Well, they haven't given up on New York. New York has very much, it's not really divided along party lines. It's much more of an upstate, downstate distinction. In fact, we see upstate Democrats who are very much pro-gun and anti-new gun laws than, say, downstate Republicans who tend to vote with their members on the other, or their, I should say, their associates on the other side of the aisle. You have Democrats and Republicans from Long Island who generally vote in favor of gun control. But once you come upstate, you have Democrats and Republicans trying to fight the same gun control laws that members of their own party are proposing in a different part of the state.
Tom, I want to talk a little bit about the actual language of the Second Amendment. And before we went to our last break, I actually read the Second Amendment. This decision, correct me if I'm wrong, actually interprets the Second Amendment. Is that correct?
It does. There's been a lot of debate for many years as to whether it was an individual right, in other words, whether a person had a right to have a handgun, for instance, or a firearm for their own protection.
The right to bear arms.
Or whether it only related to an organized militia, as in the National Guard in each state.
And the Supreme Court held that it's an individual right.
Yes, they did. The Supreme Court, in his decision, Justice Scalia gave a very detailed history of the right itself. And one of the things that he said in his decision was that the Second Amendment did not grant the right to keep and bear arms. It merely enumerated what already had existed. And he goes back to the English Bill of Rights from back before the U.S. was even the United States, which gave people the right to possess arms for self-defense.
And that was one of the concerns, actually, when the framers wrote the Constitution. They were afraid that, like the king had done, they had prohibited the colonists from owning some of the arms.
Yeah, and in fact, even in England itself, various kings would try to disarm the people in the area where their opponents had a lot of support. So they would really arbitrarily say, okay, people in this part of the country cannot have firearms, but people in this part of the country, which I know is loyal to me, the king, they can have firearms.
But
so that's ultimately what gave right to the Bill of Rights, saying, no, everybody has the right to have firearms for self-defense.
But, Tom, where do we draw the line? I mean, the Bill of Rights were written in, what, 1790? And at the time, the arms were flintlocks, correct?
Craig, what are you implying?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think we have to – does this decision mean now that everyone in the United States can own a fully automatic M16 or a fully automatic AK-47?
No, absolutely not. In fact, Scalia himself said nothing in the opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by, for instance, felons or the mentally ill, or by laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in certain places, or even certain types of firearms. Going back to the National Firearms Act way back in the 30s, machine guns, i.e. fully automatic weapons, were banned back then. Basically what they're saying is it's handguns and guns of the type that are used for hunting or that may be used in the home for self-defense, i.e. defensive weapons are okay, but that does not mean that you can run out tomorrow morning and buy a rocket launcher or something. That just doesn't apply.
But in New York State, Tom, it's perfectly legal to own a M16 or an AK-47 that's semi-automatic, correct?
Well, yes and no. There are very restrictive provisions in New York on those weapons. In fact, New York has a list of weapons that in and of themselves will be banned, and that includes most semi-automatic military-style rifles. It does make provision for some that were owned before the law came into effect in the mid-1990s, or if the guns have certain characteristics, such as, it has to have a capacity of 10 rounds or less. If you have a gun that's capable of holding more rounds than that, that would be illegal per se in New York.
Let me throw this out there for our listeners here. If you guys want to comment on what we're talking about here, why don't you give us a call, 1-800-TALK-WGY, or send us an email at info@tellyrinkyshow.com.
Tom, is this Supreme Court decision going to invalidate any of New York State's criminal laws pertaining to the possession of firearms?
No, no, it's not. Really, the only impact it would have would be on something more administrative. And by that, I mean the way that firearms licenses are handed out in New York. Really, you either get a license to possess a firearm, or specifically a handgun, or you don't. Now, judges have been imposing certain restrictions on that. In other words, they say, well, you can have a pistol for target practice, you can have one solely in your home, or you can have a full concealed carry permit. There are restrictions that they put on the licenses. There may be some debate now as to whether that is, in fact, valid. And also, given the way different counties hand out licenses, for instance, the same individual might get a full carry permit in one county, but if he were to move into a different county, he may only get a license to have it for target practice or solely to keep it in his home. So the law isn't applied uniformly throughout the state, and I think that could give rise to some challenges based on this ruling.
That sounds great, Tom. What we're going to do now is we're going to go to John from Niskayuna, who's calling in. John, how are you?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah, the problem I'm seeing with the gun laws, now I'm just looking on my computer, is the Hayes versus the U.S., where a guy was actually convicted felon, and he could not legally possess a firearm. However, he wasn't allowed to register it. When he was caught with it, he was told, he actually petitioned the Supreme Court and said the Supreme Court said he couldn't register it legally.
Tom? Are you familiar with that case?
That was with a convicted felon who had a weapon?
That's Hayes versus U.S. back in 1968.
Right. Well, again, in New York, for instance, felons are not allowed to possess firearms. And this was actually addressed by Judge Scalia in his decision on this case. He said that nothing in the opinion should be taken to cast doubt on the longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons. In other words, notwithstanding this case, if you were a convicted felon, you can't have a firearm. It's not a matter of saying, well, he had a firearm and he couldn't get it registered. If you're a felon, you're not supposed to, you're not allowed to, it's not legal to possess a firearm at all.
But isn't there a way, Tom, of getting those rights back, of getting your civil liberties back?
Well, in certain cases, one can apply for what's called a certificate of relief from civil disabilities. And that is essentially an order from, usually it's from the sentencing court, ideally from the same judge, that says, well, even though this person was convicted of a crime, that crime shouldn't be held against the person for the purpose of certain licensing. But in terms of obtaining a permit for a firearm, that's something that's looked at really, really strictly by the judges and by the courts in granting those certificates of relief.
So, Tom, is this now a done deal? Is the Second Amendment now been interpreted and the NRA is happy and they feel safe that this has been interpreted now?
Well, I think that the NRA and the other pro-gun organizations are happy that the court issued the decision it issued. However, this is really only the beginning. Now they're going to have to take cases against any municipality that tries to restrict it. Already they've said that their next step in the battle is to go after the city of Chicago, which has a very similar handgun ban and as Washington, D.C. did.
Why do you think it took so long for the Supreme Court to actually interpret the Second Amendment?
Well, I think part of it was that none of the gun organizations, and the NRA have frankly admitted this, that they didn't have the perfect case to take to the Supreme Court. They felt with this case, Heller, that they had the ideal person as the poster boy, as it were. Heller was a security guard. He was licensed to carry a firearm in the course of his work in Washington, D.C., but when he went home, he wasn't allowed to have that handgun in his own home for his own protection.
Tom, I got to cut you off. We're going into a hard break. But if you could stay with us after we're done with the news and weather, we'll get back to you. But
absolutely,
we'd love to know what the listeners think about this decision. Give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or send us an email at info@tellyrinkyshow.com. When we're back from the news and weather, we'll look at a second decision made this week that affects the punishment of convicted child rapists.
Fox News Radio, I'm Don Matheson. Seven people killed as two medical helicopters collide over Arizona.
On a forested hill here inside Flagstaff, we have two helicopters down that apparently crashed into each other.
Tom Bugner with the Flagstaff Police. The cause of the crash is under investigation. John McCain comes out swinging. He's challenging the core of Barack Obama's campaign theme.
John McCain going after Barack Obama on political integrity. At a fundraiser in Kentucky last night, McCain told supporters that this election is about trust and that, quote, on several items, Senator Obama's word cannot be trusted.
Fox's Molly Hennenberg and Obama's surrogates fire back.
John McCain flip-flopped on taxes. He referred to the evangelical community as agents of intolerance, and now he's embraced them.
Congressman Rahm Emanuel on ABC's This Week. Revelers at San Francisco's Gay Pride Parade celebrating their freedom to marry. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Well, for this evening, showers, scattered thunderstorms. Look for an overnight low right around 66 as we're waking up for Monday to start the work week. Might want to pack an umbrella, just have it handy, toss it in the back seat of the car. Scattered thunderstorms likely throughout the day. Look for a high near 80. By Tuesday, isolated thunderstorms back into the picture. Look for a high 78, low 58. Best chance of sun Wednesday. From the Weather Channel, I'm meteorologist Craig Ross with the 810 WGY Storm Team Forecast.
Usually, a mortgage company's sole focus is property, but first-rate funding is centered on people, not property. Whether you're buying a home or struggling with your current adjustable-rate mortgage, first-rate funding will give you the same amazing personal service. First-rate funding, New Carter Road, Albany, and Broadway, Saratoga Springs. Don't wait. Call today, 452-4700, and please go online, firstratefunding.net, and see how they can help you today. Registered mortgage broker, New York State Banking Department. Mortgage loans arranged with third-party providers.
You've worked hard to acquire your wealth. Let us help you keep it. Hi, I'm Abigail Doolittle, portfolio manager at Johnson Illington Advisors. Johnson Illington is a money management firm that provides very conservative and disciplined portfolio management services. Our main goal at Johnson Illington is to preserve and enhance your wealth. We have a highly experienced team led by nationally known investment veteran and economist Hugh Johnson. Visit our website at johnson-illington.com. Johnson Illington Advisors on Broadway in Albany.
You're tuned in to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY. Call 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your AT&T or Verizon cell phone. Join attorneys Matthew Tully and Greg Rinky as they discuss legal and political topics affecting you from the Capital Region and beyond. That's 1-800-TALK-WGY.
Thanks for coming back to us. If you're a first-time listener, you're listening to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and each Sunday at 9 p.m., my co-host Greg Rinky and I will let you know about the legal issues going on around the Capital Region and the world. We're broadcasting around the planet on www.wgy.com. You can also find more information about our show and us individually at www.tullyrinkyshow.com. You could also get to that show website from wgy.com. Log on to check out more about this week's topic or to get in touch with us. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down several major decisions. One stems from the case of a man who was convicted and sentenced to death in 2003 for raping his 8-year-old stepdaughter, whose injuries were so severe that they required emergency surgery. After looking at this case, the sharply divided Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision that the death penalty was unconstitutional as a punishment for the rape of a child. Does this type of decision mean that the court's moving towards abolishing capital punishment altogether, Greg?
I think that is, in fact, the way that the court is moving, Matt. I think the court in the past has signaled with several of their other decisions. Recently, they've also decided that putting to death the mentally retarded is unconstitutional. And now we see the Supreme Court in a very close 5-4 decision once again saying that it's cruel and inhumane and it's disproportionate to the crime to put to death a child rapist. Now, the facts of this case, I know, are extremely graphic and harsh. Val, actually, what were the facts of this case?
Like you said, Greg, they're fairly harsh. I don't think I should go into them on the show, but it was...
The facts are relatively easy, though, Val. A man raped his stepdaughter so severely she had to have emergency surgery. Why is that cruel and inhumane?
And how old was this child?
To give him a death penalty.
This child was 5?
Eight.
Well, do you think that the punishment would fit the crime if he was killed?
Absolutely.
I disagree.
From what I gathered from the Supreme Court is that they said, basically, you can't do capital punishment unless you commit murder. And I find that disturbing because you also have other offenses such as treason, which doesn't involve murder, where people get sentenced to death.
Well, but I would disagree with the fact that treason doesn't deal with murder. Treason does deal with the killing of innocent lives, and treason does protect our national security.
How can you figure treason deals with innocent lives? Mr. Hansen, the FBI agent, you know, he didn't result in anybody being killed.
Well, but we don't know that. He spilled secrets. He turned over
I stand corrected. I think in Hansen's case, he disclosed several double agents that ended up getting killed in Russia. But there was also another case involving nuclear submarines where technology is basically industrial espionage.
Well, I think it's unfair to call it industrial espionage. It was espionage that went to the national security, the very essence of national security of the United States. During the early 1980s, we were more than 20 years ahead of the Soviets in our submarine technology, in our nuclear submarine technology, and that all was passed by one naval officer, and that was gone in a matter of weeks. The Soviets had caught up to our technology.
Don't get me wrong. I'm in favor of capital punishment when it comes to not only cop killers, when it comes to treason, and when it comes to child rapists. And I just think that the Supreme Court got it wrong here, and I find it interesting that it was a 5-4 decision. And what you see here is a politicized Supreme Court where you have 4 ultra-conservative judges going one way, you have 4 ultra-liberal judges going another way, and you have this Judge Kennedy who's basically the only person that really matters on the Supreme Court because if you get Judge Kennedy on your side, you're going to win 5-4.
Well, not always. I mean, how do you know that Judge Kennedy's always going to be the swing vote? You don't know that.
He's doing a pretty good job at being the swing vote.
He has in this term, I agree. However, isn't this showing that the American system works? This is showing that the decisions are close. It's showing that they're well thought out. Both sides have been fleshed out.
You know what this is showing me, Greg? This is showing me that the next president is going to be critical to the continued success of the American government. Well, because the next president's probably going to be able to get a couple more of the liberal judges off.
And that's absolutely the problem that is with the United States Supreme Court is that the president can pack the judges the way that, you know, with his party. However, you never know which way a Supreme Court judge is going to start voting until they're actually on the bench. And once they're on the bench, they're there for life.
That is a very valid point. The Supreme Court judges can switch. And I think George Bush had that problem with one of his judges getting a little bit more liberal as the years went by.
Absolutely.
But now, Val, you asked a question during a pre-show about standard penalties.
Yeah, I'm wondering how they're trying to standardize the penalties. For example, if you kill somebody, you get killed. Every crime is so different. Every case is so different that how can it be all or nothing?
Well, there's federal sentencing guidelines, and based off of those guidelines, and many states have sentencing guidelines, there is a standardized penalty. So you can kind of know if, okay, I'm convicted of this and I did A, B, and C, I'll get roughly, you know, these number of years. I had a case actually before the Supreme Court. I think I'm one of the few attorneys, as best as I can recall, in the Capital Region that has won a case before the Supreme Court. And my case that I dealt with was the United States of America versus Michael Jackson. Not the Michael Jackson that everybody knows. This was an armed robber out in Missouri. And I won a writ of certiorari, and I ultimately won the case. It got remanded back to the Eighth Circuit out in St. Louis. And it dealt with the federal sentencing guidelines and whether or not the federal sentencing guidelines – were lawful because judges that are appointed by life were basically forced to give somebody a certain sentence because of their crimes and the underlying penalties.
And that's a problem. That's absolutely a problem. Judges need to have discretion. Judges need to look at the whole picture. The judge needs to look at the character of the person standing before them. Did they serve in the military? Did they serve in combat?
But in a capital punishment case, it's a jury that decides to impose death. So here, in this case, the activist judges on the Supreme Court overruled a state legislature, overruled a state executive branch, and overruled a jury, and overruled a judge that all said that this guy should fry.
Well, but did they really but they didn't overrule the Sixth Amendment. We have a Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution that prohibits cruel and inhumane punishment. And if you read the majority's decision, it stated that this type of punishment for a rape of a child, which is a horrendous crime, is not proportionate and does not deserve the death penalty.
Let's shoot to Ed from Albany real quick. Ed, how you doing tonight?
Oh, good. How you doing?
Good. Tell us about the D.C. gun laws.
Well, my question is how nine justices, Supreme Court justices, could vote on what looks like law to me in a 5-4 vote, where if you interpret the law, it seems to me any lawyer could see that it should have been a 9-0 vote. So my question is how does it get split 5-4?
Well, it got split 5-4 basically because the definition of militia was a big argument here. And the definition was, do we apply the Constitution in 2008 as if it was written in 2008, or do we apply the Constitution as it was written at the time that the laws were enacted? And that's what this comes down to. When you look at the Constitution, do you assume that the people that wrote the Constitution had a crystal ball and knew what the term militia meant in 300 years, or do you go by what the Constitution said for an average voter at the time, because the voters had approved the Constitution? Did the average voter understand militia to be every male over the age of 18, or did they think that in 300 years it was going to be the National Guard?
Well, I also think when you read the dissent's opinion, more so what they really were saying was they were saying that the right to bear arms dealt with the right to bear arms in an organized militia. When you read the Second Amendment as a whole, and that's really what the dissent did, is they said that it's not an individual right to bear arms. It's a right to bear arms as an organized militia.
Greg, isn't the Bill of Rights all about individual rights?
Absolutely.
Why then would they talk about militia being other than an individual right?
Well, I think we have to look at the way that the sentence was composed, and that's what the dissent did, is there's a comma right after bear arms, which says shall the right of the people to keep and bear arms. So in the beginning of the Second Amendment, they're talking about an organized militia, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. And then there's a comma that says the right of the people to keep and bear arms. The dissent basically is saying that right to bear arms only deals with a well-regulated militia. And we have a well-regulated militia now. We have National Guards. Some states even have organized militias.
Ed from Albany, I want to thank you for your call. I agree with you. It should have been 9-0. I think that the Constitution needs to be looked at when it was written and what the terms meant back in the 1700s, not what the terms mean now. And yes, Greg, the term militia is defined in New York state law as Army National Guard, Air National Guard, Naval Militia, as well as people that are in the New York Guard, which is separate than the New York Army National Guard. And those people are all members of the militia. But those laws were enacted way after the Second Amendment. So I think that the Supreme Court did it right on that decision, and I think that they did it wrong on the death penalty case. Tom Carr, you used to be the head of the Special Victims Unit in Rensselaer County, correct?
Yes.
With the DA's office. What's your take on the death penalty case involving the child rapist?
Well, I think it's, from the court's point of view, where they've been heading on this, it's a logical progression for them. Remember, it was back in 1977 in the case of Corker v. Georgia, where they said that the death penalty cannot be used for the rape of a woman over the age of 18. Now they're going one step further, saying, well, the death penalty is not an appropriate penalty for someone convicted of rape of a child, i.e. somebody under 18. So I think that this has been coming, and I agree with what Greg has said, that it seems to be that the court is moving towards just trying to eradicate capital punishment completely.
Tom, we got to roll into a break. When we come back, I want you to tell us what exactly 25 to life means. We hear this all the time, that child rapists can't be put to death, but that they're going to get life sentences. Here in New York, I want you to tell us if a life sentence is really a life sentence. But first, we're going to have a short little break. When we come back, we'll talk to some more listeners. We'll hear a little bit more from Tom Carr. If you want to get a hold of us, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY or press *WGY on your cell phones. You could also send us an email at info@TullyRinkyShow.com. And all of that information is on our show website, which you can get from WGY.com.
Pets aren't just animals. They're companions and often members of the family. Unfortunately, pets are not always treated with the care they deserve. Animal cruelty and neglect are sadly a reality. Detecting and reporting abuse are the most important steps in bringing animal cruelty to an end. The Schenectady County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, SPCA, is a nonprofit volunteer organization that investigates complaints of animal cruelty. Our volunteers donate their time and energy because they believe in our mission to protect animals. We are not funded. We rely exclusively on public donations. You can help with a tax-deductible donation by calling 518-755-9517 or visit our website, SchenectadySPCA.org. Or if you'd like to join the Schenectady SPCA as a volunteer, again the number 518-755-9517 or on the web, SchenectadySPCA.org. As a busy working professional, looking good's important to you. No one understands this better than Best Cleaners, the Capital Region's premier garment care provider and dry cleaner. Got a wrinkle in your schedule? Best Cleaners offers pickup and delivery of your dry cleaning right from your home or office, so you don't have to fit one more errand into your busy week. Call 458-BEST, and we'll take care of the rest. With three locations in Del Mar, Loudonville, and on the Latham Circle, Best Cleaners. Always look your best. Call 458-BEST. 458-BEST.
You're tuned in to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour on 810 WGY. Call 1-800-TALK-WGY or *WGY on your AT&T or Verizon cell phone. Join attorneys Matthew Tully and Greg Rinky as they discuss legal and political topics affecting you from the Capital Region and beyond. That's 1-800-TALK-WGY.
We're back to the Tully Rinky Legal Power Hour. I'm Matthew Tully, and I'm joined by my co-host Greg Rinky and on-air correspondents Val and Chris. To find out more about us, visit our show website at www.tullyrinkyshow.com. Tom, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. Tell us what 25 to life means in New York. I hear that all the time. Somebody got sentenced to 25 to life.
Well, 25 to life is what's called an indeterminate sentence in New York. And what it means is that the person should serve, theoretically, a minimum of 25 years and a maximum of life. However, there are a host of provisions in the corrections law, for instance, that they would get if they behave themselves in prison, they get time off for good behavior. So usually neither number is exactly accurate. Just because it's a minimum of 25, the person would not actually do 25. They would do somewhere between 85% of 25 and the upper limit being life.
Well, Tom, is there a way in New York to ensure that a child rapist does not ever get released? I mean, is there life without parole?
There is the possibility of life without parole. However, it's only applied in murder cases, and in fact in capital murder cases, not just in for want of a better word, ordinary murder cases. What the legislature has tried to do is bring in the whole civil confinement issue for child rapists and for child sex abusers, which says even though if they get a sentence of, let's say they serve 15 years, if they're still considered to be dangerous, there is a civil procedure that kicks in whereby they are essentially tried again before a civil jury, and it's up to the jury to say, yes, this person should be civilly confined. Not necessarily in a prison, but in a mental institution, because they're too dangerous to release out into society. And there are safeguards on that, of course. It has to be redone every 3 years or so. But it's only in that sense is there a possibility of someone being confined for life. Otherwise, eventually the child rapists and the child sex abusers are going to get out.
And where are they confined? If you're deemed to be mentally unstable, or you're deemed to still being a danger, are they confined in state prison, or are they confined in a mental institution? Where are they confined?
Well, the way the law is written, they're not supposed to be confined in a prison per se. They're supposed to be confined in an institution where that they can get treatment, which unfortunately usually means some kind of a state psychiatric institution.
Hmm. How long would they have to be in that institution?
Well, the way it works right now is, let's say that they have the civil trial, the jury says, okay, you're too dangerous to go out, we're confining you. They usually get confined for, I think it's 3 years, after which they have a right to a whole other trial again. So it's really only 2 to 3 years at a time that they're confined before they get to go through the process all over again. And just because one jury says, well, you're too dangerous to be released, doesn't mean that the next jury is going to agree with them. The next jury may say, you know what, he served his time, he's free to go.
And that could go on for years and years.
Absolutely.
Tom, I have a quick question for you. We talked about your days in the State Assembly. We've talked about you being the Bureau Chief of the Special Victims Unit over in Rensselaer County. Mm-hmm. You also were the DWI prosecutor down in Delaware County. You also have a very impressive resume from the Brooklyn DA's office, where you were an ADA for many years. ADA is Assistant District Attorney. You've seen child rape cases. What in New York State is the average penalty if somebody were to rape a child?
Well, again, it depends a lot on the age of the child.
Let's assume the child was 8 years old, like this case. They're nowhere near getting life sentence, correct?
No. You'd be talking about somewhere in the region of maybe 12 to 15 years on the upper end. And usually it's because the DAs really, they don't want to have to put the child through testifying, through reliving the whole incident. And in some cases, the childs aren't even what are called swearable in New York State. In other words, if the child doesn't know the difference between the truth and a lie, they can't be sworn in to give evidence, in which case, you know, someone can't be convicted of unsworn evidence against them.
Well, what I find amazing, Tom, is you say in New York State the average penalty would be about 15 years. I find it—
No. He didn't say the average. He said at the worst end.
Oh, the worst end. Well, I still find it very amazing that even at the worst end in New York State, it would be 15 years. And yet in another state, in this union, in the United States of America, we have a state saying the penalty should be death. Is there a problem with that?
Actually, there are 6 states that have a death penalty for a child rapist, and it's actually something that's been spreading more and more. I think about 20 years ago, it wasn't an issue, but more states have been enacting this kind of a penalty, and that was one of the things that Judge Alito had a problem with in his dissent. He said that the court's decision here saying, no, the death penalty for a child rapist is unconstitutional, that it cut off any national debate on a state-by-state basis on this issue.
Is there any consequences for New York being so weak on child rapists? Is there a due process violation if in New York the penalty's, worst-case scenario, 15 years, but in Louisiana it's death?
No. I mean, the sentences are less strict in New York as they are, in many crimes compared to other states.
Well, bottom line, Tom, good decision or bad decision?
I have to say in this case, I think it was, given it's early on in the whole issue of the states considering this issue, I think it was a bad decision on that point.
Hey, don't remember, if you want to give your opinion on all these matters, give us a call at 1-800-TALK-WGY, or you can also reach us on your Singular Verizon phone by *WGY.
Tom, what do you think about treason? Do you think that child rapists should be on the same level as people that commit treason?
Yes and no. It really depends on the circumstances of the case. I mean, you asked me about the average penalty in New York State. There are also cases where I've seen people get as little as 6 months in jail and 10 years on probation for a child rape case. So it's really all over the place.
But
treason, I think, is much more, it's much more serious in a broader sense.
But that's a case, Tom, where there's such a lenient penalty. There's a problem probably with the case, and the DA is probably offering that lenient sentence because he's afraid if he goes to trial, he might not get a guilty verdict. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
And you have to be a little bit lighter because you can't take the children's testimony in without being sworn. So I guess the lesson learned here for everybody that's in a penitentiary in New York State is, I guess, commit your rapist against younger kids, because the way New York State laws are is they're weak. And just so you know, for the record, I am in favor of killing people that rape little kids. So I can only imagine, and I get a little emotional when I think of my son, and God help anybody that ever did anything to him. But let's go to Wayne from Schenectady. Wayne, how are you doing tonight?
Hi. I would think that there must be a way to keep the court from unconstitutionally amending our Constitution. The Constitution says that if you amend the Constitution, you have to jump through hoops like two-thirds of the Congress and three-quarters of the states. Is that right?
That is right. For an amendment of the Constitution, there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through. And, Wayne, I see what you're saying. You're saying that these are activist judges.
Well, I'm saying that when judges go against the 10th and 9th and 10th Amendments, basically saying that these freedoms are up to the states, and the 14th Amendment, in my opinion, the 13th and 14th, do not keep the states from putting something people equally situated to the death. These are infringements of the Constitution by these judges. I don't see that the decision on the part of the gun people, the people who want to carry a gun, is a unconstitutional infringement, because the plain meaning of the Second Amendment is that the Constitution allows people the individual right to carry a gun, to bear arms, and to own an arm.
I agree with you, Wayne. I got a quick question for you. Do you agree that the next president is going to be critical to the Supreme Court?
Well, I think whoever talks from the position of the White House about the unconstitutional infringement of the people's sovereignty and tries to pass laws making that any case of less than a two-thirds majority on the court, which is not connected to the actual plain meaning of the language of the court of the Constitution as it was intended when it was written. That decision shall not serve as a precedent. It will simply apply to that case and will not be the equivalent of a constitutional amendment.
So basically, you're a black-letter law.
I think that I am for what the people put together. It's we the people who adopted the whole Constitution and all the amendments. Consequently, the court cannot, without penalty, escape this responsibility to interpret the Constitution as the people decided it at the time.
Wayne, I agree with you 1,000%. I got to let you go because we're down to our last minute here. And I do have one question for Tom. I'm getting admitted to the solicitor roles of England. I think on Tuesday, actually. So I will be not only a New York attorney, but I'll also be a solicitor in England. So I'm actually very curious to hear about European laws. And you have about 15 seconds, Tom. In Ireland, can you have justices override the Irish Constitution?
Well, Ireland, I should say, the Supreme Court interprets the Constitution. So they can look at a provision of the Constitution or a law enacted and say, you know what, that's not constitutional, and essentially override that law.
So basically it's the same as here in America. You could have activist judges that supersede the Constitution. Although we're not, as a point of clarification, I'm not taking the position that the Supreme Court is throwing out the Constitution. I'm just using the term of activistic judges. But you could do the same thing here in America as you can in Ireland.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a very similar system.
I want to thank you, Tom. It was a great honor having you on our show tonight. I think you provided very useful insight. So thanks a lot, Tom. And I want to thank all of our callers tonight. It's really great to have everybody calling. And that's it for this Sunday. If you have more to say, check out our website, www.tullyrinkyshow.com. You could also send us an email anytime at info@tullyrinkyshow.com. And once again, thanks for listening. We'll be here on WGY each Sunday at 9 p.m. Be sure to check us out next week, where we'll be talking about topics pertaining to the 4th of July.